tent.
Your foot has been ruined for years, though. He locked you in the dungeon that long?
No, she said, not even flinching at his rough description. I was only in the dungeon for a week. The ankle, the chain. He did that to me long before.
What chain?
She blinked, and he knew she'd meant to avoid telling him that one particular detail. But now that he looked, he could make out among the mass of scars a white band. And there, around her perfect, lovely other ankle, was its twin. A wind laced with the dust and coldness of a tomb gnawed through the field. Marion merely said,
"When you kill my uncle, ask him yourself."
Chapter 31.
Well, on the one hand, at least Rolf's map worked. It had been Rowan's idea, actually. And she might have felt slightly guilty for letting Adian and Lysandra believe the pirate lord had only gone after the amulet of Orinth. But at least they now knew his unholy map functioned, and that the pirate lord was indeed living in terror of the Volg returning to this harbor. She wondered what Rolf made of it, what his map had shown him of the word key, if it revealed the difference between it and the wordstone rings his men had been enslaved with. Whatever the reason, the pirate lord had sent his barmaid to scout for any hint of the Volg, not realizing Rowan had selected that dead-end alley to ensure only someone sent by Rolf would venture so far down it. And since Aelin had no doubt whatsoever that Adian and Lysandra had snuck through the streets unnoticed, well, at least that part of her evening had gone right. As for the rest of it, it was just past midnight, when Aelin wondered how the hell she and Rowan would ever go back to normalcy if they survived this war. If there'd be a day when it wasn't easy to leap over rooftops as if they were stones on a stream, to break into someone's room and hold a blade to the occupant's throat. They did the first two within the span of 15 minutes. And as they found Gavriel and Fenris waiting for them in their shared room in the Sea Dragon Inn, Aelin supposed she needn't bother with the third. Even if both she and Rowan kept their hands within casual reach of their daggers while they leaned against the wall beside the now-shut window. They'd unlocked it with Rowan's wind, only to have a candle ignite the moment the window swung away, revealing two stone-faced Fey warriors, both dressed and armed.
"You could have used the door," Fenris said, arms crossed, a bit too casually.
"Why bother when a dramatic entrance is so much more fun?" Aelin countered. Fenris's beautiful face twitched with amusement that didn't quite meet his onyx eyes.
"What a shame it'd be for you to miss out on any of that."
She grinned at him. He grinned at her. She supposed both of their smiles were less of a grin and more teeth-exposing. She snorted. "You two look like you enjoyed your summer in Dorinel. How's sweet Aunt Maeve?" Gabriel's tattooed hands closed into loose fists.
"You deny me the right to see my son, and yet you barge into our room in the dead of night to demand we divulge information about our blood-sworn queen."
"One, I did not deny you anything, kitty cat." Fenris let out what might have been a choking sound. "It's your son's decision, not mine. I don't have enough time to oversee or really care."
Lies. "It must be hard to find the time to care at all," Fenris cut in, "when you're facing a mortal lifespan."
A sly, cutting glance at Rowan. "Or is she due to settle soon?"
Oh, he was a bastard. A bitter, hard-edged bastard, the laughing side of the coin to Lorcan's sullen brooding. Maeve certainly had a type.
Rowan's face yielded nothing.
"The matter of Aelin's settling is none of your concern."
Isn't it? Knowing if she's immortal changes things. Many things.
Fenris,
Gabrielle warned. She knew enough about it. The transition pure-blooded Fey and some demi-Fey went through, once their bodies locked into immortal youth. It was a rough process, their bodies and magic needing months to adjust to the sudden freezing and reordering of their aging process. Some Fey had no control over their power. Some lost it entirely during the time it took to settle. And demi-Fey? Some might be longer-lived. Some might have the true immortal gift given to them, like Lorkin, and possibly Adian. They'd find out in the next few years if he'd take after his mother, or the male sitting across the room from her, if they survived the war. And as for her, she did not let herself think about it, precisely for the reasons Fenris claimed. "I don't see what it would change," she said to him. "There's already one immortal queen. Surely a second would be nothing new."
"And will you hand out blood oaths to males who catch your eye, or will it just be Whitethorn at your side?"
She could feel the aggression beginning to pour off Rowan, and she was half-tempted to grumble, "They're your friends, deal with them." But he kept quiet, containing himself, as she said, "You didn't seem nearly so interested in me that day at Mistward."
"Trust me, he was,"
Gabrielle muttered. Aelin lifted a brow. But Fenris was giving Gabrielle a look that promised a slow death. Rowan explained,
"Fenris was the one who volunteered to train you when Maeve told us you'd come to Wendlin."
"Was he now? Interesting. Why?" Rowan opened his mouth, but Fenris cut him off.
"It would have gotten me out of Doranell,
and we likely would have had far more fun anyway. I know what a bastard Whitethorn can be when it comes to training."
"You two would have stayed on that rooftop in Vera's and drunk yourselves to death,"
Rowan said.
"And as for training, you're alive today because of that training, boyo."
Fenris rolled his eyes. Younger, she realized. Still old by human standards, but Fenris was and felt younger. Wilder. "Speaking of Vera's," Aelin said with cool amusement, "and Doranell..."
"I will warn you," Gabrielle said quietly, "that there is little we know regarding Maeve's plans, and less still we can reveal with the Blood Oath's constraints."
"How does she do it?" Aelin asked baldly. "With Rowan, it's not... Every order I give him, even casual ones, are his to decide what to do with. Only when I actively pull on the bond can I get him to yield, and even then it's more of a suggestion."
"It is different with her,"
Gabrielle said softly.
"Dependent on the ruler it is sworn to. You two took the oath to each other with love in your hearts. You had no desire to own or rule him."
Aelin tried not to flinch at the truth of that word. Love. That day, when Rowan had looked into her eyes as he drank her blood, she'd started to realize what it was. That the feeling that passed between them, so powerful there was no language to describe it, it was not mere friendship, but something born of and strengthened by it.
"Maeve," Fenris added, "offers it with those things in mind. And so the bond itself is born of obedience to her, no matter what. She orders, we submit, for whatever she wishes."
Shadows danced in those eyes, and Aelin's fingers curled into fists. That Maeve felt the need to force any of them into her bed. Rowan had told her their familial bloodline, while distant, was still close enough that it had kept Maeve from seeking him out. But the others... "So you couldn't break it on your own?"
"Never. If we did so, the magic that binds us to her would kill us in the process,"
Fenris said. She wondered if he'd tried. How many times?
He angled his head to the side, the movement purely Lupin.
Why are you asking this?
Because if Maeve somehow can claim ownership over Adian's life, thanks to his bloodline, I can't do a damn thing to help him.
Aelin shrugged.
Because you sidetracked me.
She gave him a little smile that she knew drove Rowan and Adian insane, and, yes, it seemed it was a surefire way to piss off any Fey male, because ire flashed across Fenris's stupidly perfect face. She picked at her nails.
I know you two are old and up past your bedtime, so I'll keep this quick. Maeve's armada sails for Eelway. We are now allies, but my path might take me into direct conflict with that fleet. Maybe with her, whether I desire it or not.
Rowan had tensed slightly, and she wished it wouldn't look weak to glance at him, try to read whatever had sparked the reaction.
Fenris looked to Rowan, as if it were habit.
I think the bigger concern is whether Maeve sails to join Erewhon. She could go either way. Her network of information is too vast, Rowan countered. There's not a chance she doesn't already know the Empire's fleet is camped out in the Gulf of Oro.
Aelin wondered how often her Fey Prince had to silently correct himself about what terms to use. Our. Her. Wondered if he ever missed the two males frowning at them.
Maeve could be going to intercept it, Gavriel mused. Vanquish Morath's fleet as proof of her intentions to assist you, then play it into whatever agenda she has beyond that.
Aelin clicked her tongue. Even with Fey soldiers on those ships, she couldn't be stupid enough to risk such catastrophic losses just to get into my good graces again. No matter that Aelin knew she'd accept any offer of aid from Maeve, risk or no.
Fenris's edged smile flashed. Oh, the losses of Fey lives would be of little concern to her. It likely just increases her excitement about it.
Careful,
Gabriel said. Gods, he nearly sounded identical to Adian with that tone. Aelin went on. Regardless, you two know what we face with Erewhon. You know what Maeve wanted from me and Doranel, what Lorkin left to do. Their faces had resumed their warrior calm, and didn't so much as flicker as she asked. Did Maeve give you an order to take those keys from Lorkin as well? And the ring? Or is it just his life you'll be claiming?
If we say she gave us the order to take everything, Fenris drawled, bracing his hands behind him on the bed, will you kill us, heir of fire?
It'll depend on how useful you prove to be as an ally, Aelin simply said.
The weight hanging between her breasts beneath her shirt rumbled as if in answer.
Rolf has weapons,
Gavriel said quietly,
or will be receiving them.
Aelin lifted a brow. And will hearing about it cost me? Gavriel wasn't stupid enough to ask for Adian. The warrior just said,
they're called fire lances. Alchemists in the southern continent developed them for their own territory wars. More than that, we don't know. But the device can be wielded by one man to devastating effect.
And with magic users still so new to their returned gifts, or mostly dead thanks to Otterlin,
she would not be alone. Not the only fire-wielder on that battlefield. But only if Rolf's armada became hers. If he did what she was carefully, so carefully, guiding him to do. Reaching out to the southern continent could take months she didn't have. But if Rolf had already ordered a supply... Aelin nodded at Rowan once more, and they pushed off the wall.
That's it? Fenris demanded. Do we get to know what you plan to do with this information, or are we just your lackeys, too?
You don't trust me. I don't trust you, Aelin said. It's easier that way. She nudged open the window with her elbow. But thank you for the information.
Fenris's brows rose high enough that she wondered if Maeve had uttered those words in his hearing, and she honestly wished she'd melted her aunt that day in Doranelle. She and Rowan leaped and climbed the rooftops of Skull's Bay, the ancient shingles still slick from the day's rain. When the ocean rose glittered like a pale jewel a block ahead, Aelin paused in the shadows beside a chimney and murmured,
"There is no room for error."
Rowan laid a hand on her shoulder.
"I know. We'll make it count."
Her eyes burned. "We're playing a game against two monarchs who have ruled and schemed longer than most kingdoms have existed. And even for her, the odds of outsmarting and outmaneuvering them. Seeing the cadre, how Maeve contains them. She came so close to separating us this spring. So close."
Rowan traced his thumb over her mouth.
"Even if Maeve had kept me enslaved, I would have fought her. Every day, every hour, every breath."
He kissed her softly and said onto her lips,
"I would have fought for the rest of my life to find a way to return to you again. I knew it the moment you emerged from the Vog's darkness and smiled at me through your flames."
She swallowed the tightness in her throat and raised a brow. "You were willing to do that before all this? So few benefits back then."
Amusement and something deeper danced in his eyes.
"What I felt for you in Doranelle and what I feel for you now are the same. I just didn't think I'd ever get the chance to act on it."
She knew why she needed to hear it.
He knew, too. Darrow's and Rolf's words danced around in her head, an endless chorus of bitter threats. But Aelin only smirked at him.
"Then act away, Prince."
Rowan let out a low laugh and said nothing else as he claimed her mouth, nudging her back against the crumbling chimney. She opened for him, and his tongue swept in, thorough, lazy.
Oh, gods, this was what drove her out of her mind, this fire between them.
They could burn the entire world to ashes with it. He was hers, and she was his, and they had found each other across centuries of bloodshed and loss, across oceans and kingdoms and war. Rowan pulled back, breathing heavily, and whispered against her lips,
"Even when you're in another kingdom, Aelin, your fire is still in my blood. My mouth."
She let out a soft moan, arching into him as his hand grazed her backside, not caring if anyone spotted them in the streets below.
"You said you wouldn't take me against a tree the first time,"
she breathed, sliding her hands up his arms, across the breadth of his sculpted chest.
"What about a chimney?"
Rowan huffed another laugh and nipped at her bottom lip.
"Remind me again why I missed you."
Aelin chuckled, but the sound was quickly silenced as Rowan claimed her mouth again and kissed her deeply in the moonlight. Chapter 32. Adian had been up half the night, debating the merits of every possible place to meet his father. On the beach seemed like it was asking for a private conversation he wasn't entirely sure he wanted to have. In Rolf's headquarters felt too public. The inn courtyard felt too formal. He'd tossed and turned on his cot, nearly asleep when he heard Aelin and Rowan returning well past midnight. Not surprising they'd snuck out without telling anyone. But at least she'd gone with the Fey Prince. Lysandra, sleeping like the dead, hadn't stirred as their steps had creaked in the hall outside. She'd barely made it through the door hours earlier, Dorian already asleep on his cot,
before she'd shifted back into her usual body and swayed on her feet. Adian had hardly noticed her nakedness. Not when she teetered and he lunged to grab her before she ate carpet. She blinked dazedly at him, her skin drained of color. So he gently set her on the edge of the bed, grabbed the throw across it, and draped it around her.
"You've seen naked women plenty," she'd said, not bothering to hold it in place. "It's too hot for wool."
So the blanket slid off her back as she leaned forward, bracing her forearms on her knees and breathing deep.
"Gods, it makes me so dizzy."
Adian put a hand on her bare back and gently stroked. She stiffened at the touch, but he made broad, light circles over that velvet-soft skin. After a moment, she let out a sound that might have been a purr. The silence went on for long enough that Adian realized she'd somehow fallen asleep. And not normal sleep, but the sleep that Aelin and Rowan sometimes went into in order to let their magic recover. So deep and thorough, no training could pierce it, no instincts could override it. The body had claimed what it needed, at any cost, at any vulnerability. Easing her into his arms before she could fall right onto her face, Adian hauled her over a shoulder and carried her around to the head of the bed. He flipped back the crisp cotton sheets with one hand, and then laid her down, her once again long hair covering her high, firm breasts, so much smaller than the ones he'd first seen her with. He didn't care what size they were. They were beautiful in both forms. She hadn't awoken again, and he drifted to his own cot. He only slept once the light had shifted to the watery gray trickle before dawn, awoke just past sunrise, and gave up on sleep entirely. He doubted any sort of rest would come until this meeting was past him. So Adian bathed and dressed, debating if it made him a fool to brush his hair for his father. Lysandra was awake as he padded back into the room. The color mercifully returned to her cheeks. The king still asleep on his cot. But the shifter looked Adian over and said, "That's what you're wearing?" Lysandra made him change out of his dirty travel clothes, barged into Aelin and Rowan's room wearing no more than her own bedsheet, and took whatever she wanted from the Fae Prince's armoire. Aelin's barked, "Get out," was likely heard from across the bay, and Lysandra was smirking with feline wickedness as she returned, chucking the green jacket and pants at him. When he emerged from the bathing room, the lady was in clothes of her own. Where she'd gotten them, he had no idea. They were simple. Black tight pants, knee-high boots, and a tucked-in white shirt. She'd left her hair half down, half up, and now twisted the silken mass of it over a shoulder. Lysandra surveyed him with an approving smirk.
"Much better. Much more princely and less derelict."
Adian gave her a mocking bow. Dorian stirred, a cool breeze fluttering in as if his magic awoke as well, squinted at them both, then at the clock atop the mantel. He hauled the pillow over his eyes and went back to sleep.
"Very kingly," Adian told him,
heading for the door. Dorian grumbled something through the pillow that Adian chose not to hear. He and Lysandra grabbed a quiet breakfast in the dining room, though he had to force half the food down. The shifter asked no questions, either from consideration or because she was so busy stuffing her face with every single morsel offered at the buffet table. Gods, the females in his court ate more than he did. He supposed the magic burned through their energy reserves so fast it was a miracle they weren't constantly biting his head off. They walked to Rolf's tavern in silence, too, the sentries out front stepping aside without so much as a question. He reached for the handle when Lysandra finally said,
"You're sure?"
He nodded, and that was that. Adian opened the door, finding the cadre precisely where he guessed they'd be at this hour, eating breakfast in the taproom. The two males halted as they entered. And Adian's eyes went right to the golden-haired man, one of two, but there was no denying which one was his. Gavriel set his fork on his half-eaten plate. He wore clothes like Rowan's, and like the Fey Prince, he was heavily armed, even at breakfast. Aelin was the other side of his fair coin, but Gavriel was a murky reflection. The honed, broad features, the harsh mouth, that was where he'd gotten them from. The cropped golden hair was different, more sunshine to Adian's shoulder-length honey gold. And Adian's skin was Ash River golden, not the sun-kissed deep tan. Slowly, Gavriel stood. Adian wondered if he'd also inherited that grace, the predatory stillness, the unreadable, intent face, or if they'd both been trained that way. The lion incarnate. He'd wanted to do it this way, little more than an ambush, so his father wouldn't have time to prepare pretty speeches. He wanted to see what his father would do when confronted with him, what sort of male he was, how he reacted to anything. The other warrior, Fenris, was glancing between them, a fork still raised to his open mouth. Adian made himself walk, knees surprisingly steady, even if his body felt as if it belonged to someone else. Lysandra kept at his side, solid and bright-eyed. With every step he took, his father surveyed him, face yielding nothing until...
"You look..."
Gavriel breathed, sinking into his chair.
"You look so much like her."
Adian knew Gavriel didn't mean Aelin. Even Fenris looked at the lion now, at the grief rippling in those tawny eyes. But Adian barely remembered his mother, barely recalled anything more than her dying, wrecked face. So he said,
"She died so your queen wouldn't get her claws on me."
He wasn't sure his father was breathing. Lysandra stepped closer, a solid rock in the thrashing sea of his rage. Adian pinned his father with a look, not sure where the words came from, the wrath. But there they were, snapping from his lips like whips.
"They could have cured her in the Fey compounds, but she wouldn't go near them. Wouldn't let them come for fear of Maeve,"
he spat the name,
"knowing I existed. For fear I'd be enslaved to her as you were."
His father's tan face had drained of all color. Whatever Gavriel had suspected until now, Adian didn't care. The wolf snarled at the lion.
"She was 23 years old. She never married, and her family shunned her. She refused to tell anyone who'd sired me, and took their disdain, their humiliation, without an ounce of self-pity. She did it because she loved me, not you."
And he suddenly wished he'd asked Aelin to come, so he could tell her to burn this warrior into ashes, like that commander in Ilium. Because looking at the face, his face, he hated him. He hated him for the 23-year-old his mother had been, younger than he now was when she died, alone and sorrowful. Adian growled,
"If your bitch of a queen tries to take me, I'll slit her throat. If she hurts my family any more than she already has, I'll slit yours, too."
His father rasped,
"Adian."
The sound of the name his mother had given him on his lips.
"I want nothing from you, unless you plan to help us, in which case I will not object to the assistance. But beyond that, I want nothing from you."
"I'm sorry,"
his father said, those lion's eyes full of such grief. Adian wondered if he'd just struck a male already down.
I'm not the one you need to apologize to, he said, turning toward the door.
His father's chair scraped against the floor.
Adian.
Adian kept walking, Lysandra falling into place beside him.
Please,
his father said, as Adian's hand clamped down on the handle.
Go to hell,
Adian said, and left. He didn't return to the Ocean Rose, and he couldn't stand to be around people, to be around their sounds and smells. So he strode for the dense mountain above the bay, losing himself in the jungle of leaves and shade and damp soil. Lysandra stayed a step behind him, silent as he was. It wasn't until he'd found a rocky outcropping jutting from the side of the mountain to overlook the bay, the town, the pristine waters beyond, that he paused, that he sat, and breathed. Lysandra sat beside him on the flat rock, crossing her legs beneath her. He said,
I didn't expect to say any of that.
She was gazing toward the nearby watchtower nestled at the base of the mountain. He watched her green eyes survey the lower level, where Shipbreaker was wrapped around a massive wheel, the spiraling exterior staircase up the tower itself, all the way up to the upper levels, where a catapult and a turret-mounted massive harpoon, or was it a giant crossbow, was locked into place. Its wielder seat an arrow aimed at an invisible enemy in the bay below. With the size of the weapon and the machine that had been rigged to launch it into the bay, he had no doubt it could smash through a hull and do lethal damage to a ship, or spear three men on it. Lysandra said simply,
You spoke from your heart. Perhaps it's good he heard that.
We need them to work with us. I might have made an enemy of him.
She tucked her hair over a shoulder.
Trust me, Adian, you have not. If you'd told him to crawl over hot coals, he would have.
He'll realize soon enough who exactly I am, and perhaps not be so desperate.
Who exactly do you think you are?
She frowned at him. Otterlin's whore? Is that what you still think of yourself? The general who held his kingdom together, who saved his people when they were forgotten even by their own queen. That's the man I know. She snarled softly, and nodded him.
And if he starts pointing fingers, I'll remind him that he served that bitch in Doranel for centuries without question.
Adian snorted.
I'd pay good money to see you go toe-to-toe with him, and Fenris.
She nudged him with an elbow.
You say the word, General, and I'll transform into the face of their nightmares.
And what creature is that?
She gave him a knowing little smile.
Something I've been working on.
I don't want to know, do I?
White teeth flashed. No, you really don't.
He laughed, surprised he could even do so.
He's a handsome bastard, I'll give him that.
I think Maeve likes to collect pretty men.
Adian snorted.
Why not? She has to deal with them for eternity. They might as well be pleasant to look at.
She laughed again, and the sound loosed a weight from his shoulders. Bearing both Goldrin and Damaris for once, Aelin walked into the Sea Dragon 2 hours later, and wished for the days when she could sleep without the dread or urgency of something pulling at her. Wished for the days when she might have had the time to bed her god's damned lover, and not choose to catch a few hours of sleep instead. She'd meant to. Last night, they'd returned to the inn, and she'd bathed faster than she'd ever washed before. She'd even emerged from the bathing room naked, and found her fey prince asleep atop the glowingly white bed, still closed, looking for all the world like he'd intended to close his eyes while she washed.
and the heavy exhaustion on him. She let Rowan rest. Had curled up beside him above the blankets, still naked, and had been unconscious before her head had settled against his chest. There would be a time, she knew, when they would not be able to sleep so safely, so soundly. A grand total of 5 minutes before Lysandra barged in, Rowan had awoken, and begun the process of awaking her, too. Slowly, with taunting proprietary strokes down her bare torso, her thighs, accented with little biting kisses to her mouth, her ear, her neck. But as soon as Lysandra had thundered through the room to steal clothes for Adian, as soon as she'd explained where Adian was going, the interruption had lasted, made her remember what exactly she needed to accomplish today. With a man currently inclined to kill her and a scattered, petrified fleet. Gavriel and Fenris were now sitting with Rolf at the table in the back of the tap room. No sign of Adian, both a bit wide-eyed as she swaggered in. She might have preened at the look, had Rowan not prowled in right behind her, already prepared to slit their throats. Rolf shot to his feet. "What are you doing here?" "I would be very, very careful how you speak to her today, Captain," Fenris said, with more wariness and consideration than she'd seen him use yesterday. His eyes were fixed on Rowan, who was indeed watching Rolf as if he were dinner. "Choose your words wisely." Rolf glanced at Rowan, saw his face, and seemed to get it. Maybe that caution would make Rolf more inclined to agree to her request today. If she played it right. If she'd played all of it right. Aelin gave Rolf a little smile and leaned against the vacant table beside theirs, the chipped gold lettering on the slats reading Mist Cutter. Rowan took up a spot beside her, his knee brushing hers, like even a few feet of distance was unbearable. But she smiled a bit wider at Rolf. "I came to see if you'd changed your mind about my alliance." Rolf drummed his tattooed fingers on the table, right over some gilded letters that read Thresher. And beside it, a map of the continent had been spread between Rolf and the Fey warriors. Not the map she really, truly needed, now that she knew the damn thing worked. But Aelin stiffened at what she beheld. "What is that?" she said, noting the silver figurines camped across the middle of the continent, an impenetrable line from the Farian Gap to the mouth of the Avery, and the additional figures in the Gulf of Oro, and in Melisande, and Fenharrow, and near Ilway's northern border. Gavriel, looking a bit like someone had knocked him in the head, gods, how had the meeting with Adian gone, said before Rolf could get his throat ripped out by Rowan with whatever response he had brewing. "Captain Rolf received word this morning. He wanted our counsel." "What is this?" she said, stabbing a finger near the main line of figures stretched across the middle of the continent. "It's the latest report," Rolf drawled, "of the locations of Morath's armies. They have moved into position. Aid to the north is now impossible. And they stand poised to strike Ilway." Chapter 33 "Ilway has no standing army," Aelin said, feeling the blood drain from her face. "There is nothing and no one to fight after this spring, save for rebel militia bands." Rowan said to Rolf,
"Do you have exact numbers?"
"No," the captain said. "The news was given only as a warning, to keep any shipments away from the Avery. I wanted their opinions," a nod of the chin toward the cadre, "for handling it. Though I suppose I should have invited you, too, since they seem intent on telling you my business." None of them deigned to respond. Aelin scanned that line.
that line of armies.
Rowan said, "How fast do they move?"
"The legions departed Morath nearly 3 weeks ago,"
Gabriel supplied.
"They moved faster than any army I've ever seen."
"The timing of it."
"No.
No. No, it couldn't be because of Ilium, because she'd taunted him."
"It's an extermination," Rolf said baldly.
She closed her eyes, swallowing hard. Even the captain didn't dare speak. Rowan slid a hand along her lower back, a silent comfort.
He knew.
Was piecing it together, too. She opened her eyes, that line burning into her vision, her heart, and said,
"It's a message.
For me." She unfurled her fist, gazing at the scar there.
"Why attack Ilway, though?" Fenris asked. "And why move into position but not sack it?"
She couldn't say the words aloud. That she'd brought this upon Ilway by mocking Erewhon, because he knew who Selena Sardothian had cared for, and he wanted to break her spirit, her heart, by showing her what his armies could do. What they would do, whenever he now felt like it. Not to Terrasen, but to the kingdom of the friend she'd loved so dearly. The kingdom she had sworn to protect. To save. Rowan said,
"We have personal ties to Ilway. He knows it matters to her."
Fenris's eyes lingered on her, scanning. But Gavriel, voice steady, said,
"Erewhon now holds everything south of the Avery, save for this archipelago. And even here, he has a foothold in the Dead End."
Aelin stared at that map, at the space that now seemed so small to the north. To the west, the vast expanse of the wastes spread beyond the mountainous continental divide. And her gaze snagged on a small name along the western coast. Briarcliff. The name clanged through her, shuddering her awake, and she realized they'd been talking, debating how such an army might move so quickly over the terrain. She rubbed her temple, staring at that speck on the map, considering the life debt owed to her. Her gaze dragged down, south, to the Red Desert, where another life debt, many life debts, waited for her to claim them. Aelin realized they had asked her something, but she didn't care to figure it out as she said quietly to Rolf,
"You're going to give me your armada. You're going to arm it with those fire lances I know you've ordered, and you will ship any extras to the Mycenaean fleet when they arrive."
Silence. Rolf barked a laugh and sat again.
"Like hell I am."
He waved that tattooed hand over the map, the waters inked on it churning and changing in some pattern she wondered if only he could read. A pattern she needed him to be able to read, to find that lock.
"This just shows how utterly outmatched you are."
He chewed over her words.
"The Mycenaean fleet is little more than a myth. A bedside tale."
Aelin looked to the hilt of Rolf's sword, to the inn itself, and his ship anchored just outside. "You are the heir of the Mycenaean people," Aelin said, "and I have come to claim the debt you owe my bloodline on that account, too." Rolf did not move. Did not blink. "Or were all the sea dragon references from some personal fetish?" Aelin asked.
"The Mycenaeans are gone,"
Rolf said flatly. "I don't think so. I think they have been hiding here, in the Dead Islands, for a long, long time. And you somehow managed to claw your way back to power." The three Fey males were glancing between them. Aelin said to Rolf, "I have liberated Ilium from Otterlin.
I took back the city, your ancient home, for you, for the Mycenaeans. It is yours, if you dare to claim your people's inheritance. Rolf's hand shook slightly. He fisted it, tucking it beneath the table. She allowed a flicker of her magic to rise to the surface then, allowed the gold in her eyes to glow like bright flame. Gavriel and Fenris straightened as her power filled the room, filled the city. The word key between her breasts began thrumming, whispering. She knew there was nothing human, nothing mortal on her face. Knew it, because Rolf's golden brown skin had paled to a sickly sheen. She closed her eyes and loosed a breath. The tendril of power she'd gathered rippled away in an invisible line. The world shuddered in its wake. A city bell chimed once, twice in its force. Even the waters in the bay shivered as it swept past and out into the archipelago. When Aelin opened her eyes, the mortality had returned. "What the rutting hell was that?" Rolf at last demanded. Fenris and Gavriel became very interested in the map before them. Rowan said smoothly,
"Milady has to release bits of her power daily, or it can consume her."
Despite herself, despite what she'd done, she decided she wanted Rowan to call her Milady at least once every day. Rowan continued on, pressing Rolf about the moving army. The pirate lord, who Lysandra had confirmed weeks ago was Mycenaean thanks to Aerobin's own spying on his business partners, seemed barely able to speak, thanks to the offer she'd laid out for him. But Aelin merely waited. Adian and Lysandra arrived after some time, and her cousin only spared Gavriel a passing glance as he stood over the map and fell into that general's mindset, demanding details large and minute. But Gavriel silently stared up at his son, watching her cousin's eyes dart over the map, listening to the sound of his voice as if it were a song he was trying to memorize. Lysandra drifted to the window, monitoring the bay, like she could see that ripple Aelin had sent out into the world. The shifter had told Adian by now of why they had truly gone to Ilium. Not only to see Brannan, not only to save its people, but for this. She and the shifter had hatched the plan during the long night watches together on the road, considering all pitfalls and benefits. Dorian strolled in 10 minutes later, his eyes going straight to Aelin. He'd felt it too. The king gave a polite greeting to Rolf, then remained silent as he was briefed on the positioning of Erewhon's armies. Then he slid into a seat beside her, while the other males continued discussing supply routes and weapons, being led in circle after circle by Rowan. Dorian just gave her an unreadable glance and folded his ankle over a knee. The clock struck 11, and Aelin rose to her feet in the middle of whatever Fenris had been saying about various armor, and Rolf possibly investing in the ore to supply the demand. Silence fell again. Aelin said to Rolf, "Thank you for your hospitality." And then turned away. She made it a step before he demanded, "That's it?" She looked over her shoulder, Rowan approaching her side. Aelin let a bit of that flame rise to the surface. "Yes. If you will not give me an armada, if you will not unite what is left of the Mycenaeans and return to Terrasen, then I'll find someone else who will."
"There is no one else."
Again, her eyes went to the map on his table. "You once said I would pay for my arrogance, and I did. Many times. But Sam and I took on your entire city and fleet and destroyed it, all for 200 lives you deemed less than human. So perhaps I've been underestimating myself.
Perhaps I do not need you after all.
She turned again, and Rolf sneered. Did Sam die still pining after you? Or did you finally stop treating him like filth? There was a choking sound, and a slam and rattle of glasses. She looked slowly to find Rowan with his hand around Rolf's neck. The captain pressed onto the map, the figures scattered everywhere. Rowan's snarling teeth close to ripping off Rolf's ear. Fenris smirked a bit. I told you to choose your words carefully, Rolf. Adian seemed to be doing his best to ignore his father, as he said to the captain.
Nice to meet you.
Then he strolled toward where Aelin, Dorian, and Lysandra waited by the door. Rowan leaned in, murmuring something in Rolf's ear that made him blanch, then shoved him a bit harder into the table before stalking for Aelin. Rolf set his hands on the table, pushing up to bark some surely stupid words at them, but went rigid, as if some pulse thrashed through his body. He turned his hands over, fitting the edges of his palms together. His eyes lifted, but not to her, to the windows, to the bells that had begun ringing in the twin watchtowers flanking the mouth of the bay. The frantic pealing set the streets beyond them halting, silencing. Each bleat's meaning was clear enough. Rolf's face went pale. Aelin watched as black, darker than the ink that had been etched there, spread across his fingers, to his palms. Black such as only the Volg could bring. Oh, there was no doubt now that the map worked. She said to her companions, "We leave. Now." Rolf was already storming toward her, toward the door. He said nothing as he flung it open, striding onto the quay, where his first mate and quartermaster were already sprinting for him. Aelin shut the door behind Rolf and surveyed her friends, and the cadre. It was Fenris who spoke first, rising to his feet and watching through the window as Rolf and his men rushed about.
"Remind me never to get on your bad side."
Dorian said quietly,
"If that force reaches this town, these people..."
"It won't," Aelin said, meeting Rowan's stare. Pine-green eyes held her own.
"Show them why you're my blood-sworn," she silently told him.
A hint of a wicked smile. Rowan turned to them.
"Let's go."
"Go?" Fenris blurted, pointing to the window. "Where?"
"There's a boat," Adian said, "anchored on the other side of the island."
He inclined his head toward Lysandra.
"You think they'd notice a skiff being tugged out to sea by a shark last night, but..."
The door banged open, and Rolf's towering figure filled it.
"You."
Aelin put a hand on her chest.
"Me?"
"You sent that magic out there. You summoned them."
She barked a laugh, pushing off the table. "If I ever learned such a useful talent, I'd use it for summoning my allies, I think. Or the Mycenaeans, since you seem to be so adamant they don't exist." She glanced over his shoulder. The sky was still clear. "Good luck," she said, stepping around him. Dorian blurted,
"What?"
Aelin looked the King of Otterlin over. "This isn't our battle, and I won't sacrifice my kingdom's fate over a skirmish with the Volg. If you have any sense, you won't either." Rolf's face contorted with wrath, even as fear, deep and true, shone in his eyes. She took a step toward the chaotic streets, but paused, turning to the pirate lord. "I suppose the cadre will be coming with me, too, since they're now my allies." Silently, Fenris and Gabriel approached, and she could have sighed with relief that they did so without question, that Gabriel was willing to do whatever it took to stay near his son. Rolf hissed,
You think withholding your assistance will sway me into helping you?
But far beyond the bay, between the distant humped islands, a cloud of darkness gathered. I meant what I said, Rolf. I can do fine without you, Armada or no, Mycenaeans or no. And this island has now become dangerous for my cause.
She inclined her head toward the sea.
I'll offer a prayer to Mala for you.
She patted the hilt of Goldrin.
A bit of advice, from one professional criminal to the other. Cut off their heads. It's the only way to kill them. Unless you burn them alive. But I bet most would jump ship and swim to shore before your flaming arrows can do much damage.
And what of your idealism? What of that child who stole 200 slaves from me? You'd leave the people of this island to perish?
Yes, she said simply. I told you, Rolf, that Indovir taught me some things.
Rolf swore. Do you think Sam would stand for this?
Sam is dead, she said. Because men like you and Aerobin have power. But Aerobin's reign is now over. She smiled at the darkening horizon. Seems like yours might end rather soon as well.
You bitch.
Rowan snarled, taking all of a step before Rolf flinched away. Rushing footsteps sounded, then Rolf's quartermaster filled the doorway. He panted as he rested a hand on the threshold, the other gripping the sea dragon-shaped pommel of his sword.
We are knee-deep in shit.
Aelin paused. Rolf's face tightened.
How bad?
The captain asked. He wiped the sweat from his brow.
8 warships teeming with soldiers, at least 100 on each. More on the lower levels I couldn't see. They're flanked by 2 sea wyverns, all moving so fast that it's like storm winds carry them.
Aelin cut a glance at Rowan. How quickly can we get to that boat? Rolf was gazing at the few ships in his harbor, his face deathly pale. At Shipbreaker out in the bay, the chain currently beneath the calm surface. Fenris, seeing the captain's stare, observed, Those sea wyverns will snap that chain. Get your people off this island. Use every skiff and sloop you have and get them out. Rolf slowly turned to Aelin, his sea-green eyes simmering with hate and resignation.
Is this an attempt to call my bluff?
Aelin toyed with the end of her braid. No. It's convenient timing, but no. Rolf surveyed them all, the power that could level this island if they chose. His voice was hoarse as he at last spoke.
I want to be admiral. I want this entire archipelago. I want Ilium. And when this war is over, I want Lord in front of my name, as it was before my ancestors' names long ago. What am I payment?
Aelin surveyed him in turn, the entire room deathly quiet compared to the chaos of outside. For every Morath ship you sack, you can keep whatever gold and treasure is aboard it. But weapons and ammunition go to the front. I'll give you land, but no royal titles beyond those of Lord of Ilium and King of the Archipelago. If you bear any offspring, I will recognize them as your heirs, as I would any children Dorian might bear.
Dorian nodded gravely. Otterlin will recognize you and your heirs, and this land as yours.
Rolf ground out.
You send those bastards down to the Yinky Black, and my fleet is yours. I cannot guarantee the Mycenaeans will rise, though. We've been scattered too far and too long. Only a small number live here, and they will not stir without proper motivation.
He glanced toward the bar, as if he'd expected to see someone behind it. But Aelin held out her hand, smiling faintly. Leave that to me. Tattooed skin met scarred flesh as Rolf shook her hand. Hard enough to break bones, but she did it right back. Sent a little flame searing into his finger.